This show is not a startup series, and it's not one of those self-help series either. It's probably going to have elements of both of those things, but this is more like the live coverage of my midlife crisis. Will I make it? Will I crash and burn? Stick around and find out. I'd actually quite like to know myself. After spending my whole life comfortably employed, I'm taking a risk. I'm starting a business as a podcast producer. Through this series, I'll be talking to others who've also had to make a terrifying leap, see what I can learn from them, and hopefully there's something in it for you as well. In this episode, it's Starley Kine. She's also a podcast producer. She created one of the world's most popular podcasts, only to have it cancelled at the height of its popularity.
I've never had something like change me more than this. Like, I've never like experienced anything like that. Like, the level of disillusionment was really intense. I still feel waves of the effects of it all the time.
This show's called Reasons Not to Die. My name's Sam Eichen, and like so many journalists, my career's ground to a halt. There are reportedly about 3,000 less journalists working in Australia right now than there were 10 years ago. Because there's far less money in news now, those who do remain in the industry are being asked to do more and more with less and less. It's a recipe for disillusionment at best or mental illness at worst. My father wasn't a journalist, but I remember when he hit a similar wall to me back in his 40s, he'd had enough. Unbeknownst to me, life had broken him, and he died of suicide. I've told this story publicly a few times before, and I don't really want to do it again just yet. This is me speaking about it on the radio a few years back.
I hadn't spoken to him for about a year when he bought me a train ticket down to Melbourne and said, I want you to come and spend Christmas with me. And so me being the teenager that I was, I said, I'm not too keen on catching the train down. I will fly down after New Year because I wanted to have New Year's Eve with the boys, of course, and do what you do when you're a teenager. He died of suicide on the 27th of December. So he wasn't the kind of person that I ever
thought. It totally ambushed you.
Oh, I had no idea that he was sad, that he had suffered from depression. And this guy was my hero. He was good.
So now, almost 30 years later, I'm in my mid-40s, rapidly approaching the age he was when he died. I'm also seeing a lot of the same problems playing out for me. I've seen lots of studies and reports that suggest suicidal tendencies may be hereditary, so I've always been hyper aware of any of the warning signs. Depression, anxiety, isolation, escapism, addiction. I can see them all in one form or another whenever I look in the mirror. Before we go any further, I want anyone who can relate to anything I'm saying, or if you feel like you might be at risk, please reach out. Whatever country you're in, there are professionals sitting by the phone waiting to help you. The details are in the show notes or at the end of this episode. I've made the call. It probably saved my life. Please reach out. It could be the most important thing that you'll ever do. Ever. Stop listening to podcasts and use your phone as a phone. Dealing with suicide in the family is a different kind of grief. I still, to this day, carry the shame and the guilt around with me. Rationalize it as much as you like. There's still part of my monkey brain that tells me I should have been there to save my dad. And here's another frightening statistic. Research is showing the fallout from a suicide can be carried forward for 3 generations. That's not something I'm prepared to let my kids deal with.
I love you very, 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 very much.
I love you the best. You're the best dad ever.
I love those kids. The big one is Bobby. He wants to be a builder. Yep, Bob the Builder. And the little one is Teddy. When he grows up, he wants to be a plane this week.
My name is Ted and I love you because you're my dad.
Is that the only reason?
Yeah.
Okay. So nothing that I do makes me special?
Some stuff that makes you special.
So why am I telling you this? Well, let's go back a little bit. I'd worked in Sydney for about 10 years, but I left because Sydney was just becoming such an awful place to live for us. It didn't matter how much money I earned. The price of putting a roof over my family's head kept going up faster and faster. The rest of the time I was stuck in traffic. So we packed everything up, jumped on the Spirit of Tasmania and moved to Hobart. But from a career perspective, there's not a lot of options for a journalist at my level. I gave up my latest media job as the state news director for a commercial radio network last year because the hours were horrible and there's something about commercial radio that just seems to attract psychopaths, and I just wanted to kill myself. I had to make a change. So I took a job as a communications guy with this big corporation, and it was great. We lived happily ever after. End of podcast. Not really. I was promised I'd be creating a lot of content and doing a lot of things that I love, writing, making videos, talking to the media, but in essence, I was just an overpaid PA and I hated it. They hated me, is how that ended.
So I got fired today. It's fun, isn't it? The first thing I did was go to the shop and spend $200 on a microphone. So... look who's making good choices. And now I'm just going for a nice walk by the park. Tonight is the night that I spend with my ex-wife and my children. And I don't think I'm going to tell them what's happened today just yet. But I'll have to pretty soon. Anyway, bit of a shock to the system. But... I guess my plans to work for myself have been accelerated.
That's me walking the park with my girlfriend, Angela, about an hour after I'd been let go. I'd been fired before. There's this old industry saying that you haven't worked as a journalist until you've been fired. It's a stupid saying made up by someone who's just been fired, obviously. But this hit me harder than any other job I'd lost before. When it comes to journalism, I wasn't at the peak of the industry or anywhere near it. But being a journalist or a broadcaster was my identity. I was Sam Eichen, the journalist, or Sam, the radio guy. So making the decision to leave that career behind was such a big one. Oh, and I'd also gone through a really rough separation. I've had to fight for almost equal custody of my kids, lost all of my stuff in a flash flood, and I was in debt, a lot of debt. I could feel the downward spiral beginning, depression, anxiety wrapping their tentacles around my throat, starting to contract. So to reduce stress and anxiety, I decided I'd start a business. I should point out that's a joke because starting a business is stressful. Anyway, let's go back to the park.
Yeah, it was. It clearly, for whatever reason, it was not the right job for you. Certainly not at this point in time. And starting any kind of new business, I think, takes... either courage or desperation or both. And now you've got both.
I can't see how anything could possibly go wrong. So there's this quote. It goes, "The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome." Apparently it's from Albert Einstein, except it's not an Einstein quote. And it's not the definition of insanity, but it still makes sense to me. I've been leaving one job for another in the hope that it would make me happier. And that's never turned out to be the case.
The theory they had to work really, really, really hard and at the suffering of everything else, I really, really disagree with that. You just look at society at the moment and just how happy is everyone? They're not.
When I studied broadcasting at WAPA, that is the Western Australian Academy of Performing Arts, famous because Hugh Jackman went there, I had this funny little copywriting lecturer. He was one of those people who had this infectious, positive energy about him. Everyone liked him. His name was Josh Langley, and he's since become an award-winning author because he's been following his heart. And that's exactly what he's been encouraging people to do through his work.
Released a book late last year called Find Your Creative Mojo, How to Overcome Fear, Procrastination, and Self-Doubt to Express Your True Self. Now, that's a book that sort of summarizes my philosophy on life, creativity, and everything in between.
So I said I needed a new perspective. Well, Josh just seems to break all the rules. He encourages us to imagine that you have the courage to overcome your fears and create what you want. He's almost like the physical embodiment of the phrase I've got written on my whiteboard in front of me right now. What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail?
Self-expression was basically the one key thing that I discovered while writing the book, and that how it's so important to have our own self-expression, to find our voice. Because if we don't find our own voice, we don't find, you know, it's almost like a reason to live. We just aimlessly keep going through life, just, you know, on the treadmill, just going round and round and round, trying to think everything out there is going to actually make us happy, when in fact it's inside us. And when we find that and when we express that, we become happier, fuller people.
Got to find your reasons to live. I'll be happy with reasons not to die. But this is what I needed to hear. My creative passion has always been broadcasting ever since I fell into the career in 2001. I'd always enjoyed work the most when I was reporting out in the field or doing a radio show. But you can't just wake up and do that for a job without being attached to a huge corporation, can you? Well, actually, lots of people do these days. The podcasting industry is growing rapidly. So I'm starting a business making podcasts for myself and for anyone else who needs them. And let's face it, everybody needs a podcast. To get a real look at the podcast industry, I thought I'd look up someone who's been really badly burnt by it.
I'm Starley Kine. How do people normally introduce
myself? I would say you're the creator of one of the most innovative and popular podcasts that the world has seen.
It would probably be weird if I said that, don't you think?
Starley Kine's well known as the host of the hit podcast Mystery Show. If you watch Conan, you probably saw her on TV late last year. Mystery Show was the number one podcast in the world with what was, at the time, one of the world's most exciting startups, the podcast company Gimlet Media. But her list of credits goes much further than that. Before Mystery Show, she worked with This American Life, which has consistently been one of the biggest names in podcasting, and it still is. It also changed the face of the industry when it created the spin-off show Serial. Serial was so big, it's credited with sending podcasts mainstream. These days, you'll hear podcasters refer to the pre-serial and post-serial eras. So while she was working with This American Life, Starley Kine had an idea. And it turned out to be a very good idea. She took her investigative journalism skills and applied them to everyday mysteries. Mysteries that can't be solved on Google. Things like who owned this elaborate belt buckle someone found in the street decades ago that they've wanted to give back to the owner for years. Or why does a popular Welcome Back Cotter lunchbox depict a scene that was never in any Welcome Back Cotter episodes? It was a breath of fresh air, impeccably well produced and just so engaging, the perfect escape from the horrors of the daily news cycle. She'd had it rolling around in her head for a while, and she'd been quietly working on a pilot while she was at This American Life.
I didn't want to do like a fake This American Life show. I didn't want to do a storytelling show because I thought it would feel like a fake This American Life show. And This American Life was already good at what they, you know, they already did it best. So I didn't want to do a knockoff. I mean, I could do stories for This American Life if I wanted to, or if they were right for the show, but I feel like I'm one of the only people who doesn't want to kind of endlessly talk, you know, like I I'll make a show if I can think of an idea that I want to work on, but it wasn't like my main goal. And then I had the idea to solve mysteries, and that seemed fun and actually really challenging. So that's why I went in that direction.
While she was working with This American Life, one of her colleagues was this guy called Alex Bloomberg. Now, if you don't know who Bloomberg is, you should check out his journey in a podcast called Startup. It's amazing. Go all the way back to the first episode in 2014. You'll hear how he built a podcasting company called Gimlet Media, which he recently sold to Spotify for hundreds of millions of dollars. He managed to raise tens of millions in venture capital to start up the company, and then he hired staff to kick it off with three shows, Startup, Reply All, and Starley Kine's Mystery Show.
When Alex was starting Gimlet, he was looking for shows. Originally, there was only going to be one show I think he put out. I think he was only going to put out Reply All the first year. Yeah. And then by the time he started Gimlet, behind the offices even opened, he had said, no, it was going to be Mystery Show, Reply All, and Startup. So like we had a conversation that was like, we had a lunch where he, like as friends, where he was only doing Reply All. And then kind of It happened like very organically. Then him and I started editing that pilot. Like it was already done, but he gave me like a few notes.
Yeah.
And then somehow it just was decided that Mystery Show was going to be put out by Gimlet too. And so then when I started working there, it was already, that was always the plan. But in the very early days, before I kind of had like a staff, I was also helping on Reply All and Startup.
Yeah, right. So you were
like editing.
You were on top of the world then, though. You had a show. It was going crazy. It was what, the most popular podcast in the world at that point.
Yeah, I think it probably was briefly the most popular podcast in the world. And now the top charts don't mean the same because now people pay for like the downloads. The top charts don't reflect as much popularity as they did in the beginning, that iTunes chart, you know?
Yeah.
It was very popular.
What? So you went from this massive high, and for you, I mean, emotionally, this must have just been a massive roller coaster to suddenly being, well, I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah. I mean, it just, the massive high was when the show was on the air, when I was putting out new episodes, and I actually wanted to keep doing that. Like, I didn't want the season to end. Gimlet was very weird about the success of Mystery Show. Like, they liked it, but they also seemed very nervous about the success of it. I don't know. The company changed really fast from what I thought it had set out to be. And so it seemed by the time that first year was done of the company that they'd already decided you didn't exactly need a Mystery Show for them to be a company.
Right.
Like it was almost inconvenient to have a show that took longer. You just had to put more time into making it. And it was more unpredictable, which is also what made it exciting. But so I don't know. I think that Gimlet, even by the end of season one of Mystery Show, kind of were already feeling like doubts about having a show like Mystery Show. But so basically what happened was the season one ended, and then I went on to make season two. Season two was a lot harder to make because I felt like I had to change the show up. Like the reason I wanted to keep season one going is because I knew what season one was. But if you stop and then you start again, you have to like kind of figure out like a new angle of what the show is. And then mysteries were not in season one. Everything, all the mysteries fully like just got solved one after another. It was like a miracle. It was so crazy. It was all working out. And then season two, they were like kind of collapsing really early, the mysteries. Then Gimlet used that as an opportunity. They thought it was taking too long and they just canceled it and got rid of me.
Now, Alex Bloomberg knows far more about running a podcasting business than I do, so I'm not going to question his business decision to axe Mystery Show. But for Starley, it was a huge kick in the teeth and it made no sense. Her amazing creation that was going really well was canned at the height of its popularity.
The craziest part, because podcasting is a very weird industry, was like the minute Mystery Show was canceled, it was like everything evaporated. Everything was gone. Like the success the show had brought was completely had disappeared.
You were just another person. I think you in your.
I wasn't another person because I had made this thing, and so like that does a weird thing to you. Like you're not another person because you've done something that people want.
Yeah,
but like in terms of like tangible yield, was like it was like starting over.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
fully like starting over.
I get what you're saying, and I think when you were talking about what had happened, and you know it was obviously a massive blow to you. I think it took you a few months before you went public with exactly what happened. But one of the things you said was even that you lost your email address, which it seems like a small thing, but that's part of your work. It's part of who you are. And yeah, you know, even the little things.
Oh yeah. Well, that was terrible because I lost like the way for people to write to me. The listeners of Mystery Show are so incredible. And it was the response was so lovely. And so it was like they canceled the show, shut the email address, and people were writing and they were just getting bounced back. I lost every single email that anyone ever wrote to me about the show. I lost any record of the show being made or the response, like incredibly nice messages and all the contacts with everyone who helped me solve a mystery gone. Like it wasn't just like the symbolism of losing an email address. It was, I have an email address, my own, you know, it was more like Gimlet just had no reverence for like the show existing, for the show having existed, all the work that got put into it. Like they just wanted it to not exist anymore.
She tried to revive the show,
pitching a rebranded version to other podcasting companies, her fan base was loyal, and it would certainly follow Starley wherever she went. Plenty of companies were happy to listen to her, but after being cast out by Gimlet, nobody was prepared to give it another go. It was devastating.
There was no serious offer from a podcast company this whole time. Recently, when I started tweeting, there's been a few, like, people have contacted me, but like, it's like, I went to the major podcasting companies after the show got canceled and nobody was interested, which was like really disheartening and awful. And it was only, it was a couple public radio, well, it was one public radio station that was interested, and that I was really grateful to them, but I just didn't know if I wanted to go back. By that time, by that time that public radio station was interested, I was like so worried about anyone owning the show. And also, I don't fully own Mystery Show. Gimlet owns half. So this whole time, they've made it really hard for companies to take it over or anyone else to like fund it. I think every company thought Mystery Show wasn't worth actually doing. It was a total surprise to me. Like, I always thought that you just like make something that's good, people like it, and then you have, that's all you need to do. And like, the lesson I learned from Mystery Show was like stuff that I thought mattered didn't matter in the same way, at least in this industry. Like, that was the hardest part of this. Like, the lessons I learned in that, about that. The listeners are so loyal.
Yeah.
And everyone asked for it back. And so like, the demand was there. And so like, that's what didn't match up. And people, and it wasn't even like, people, it wasn't even, companies weren't even asking me how the show was made. They were just assuming it was going to be too much. And so like, I don't know, it was just, it's a really weird thing to have something that people want to hear and people want to have made, and then no one, like, that somehow not be the incentive for any company.
The one thing that spurred Starley on was the support that she was getting from her followers on social media. They were still hungry for the show. They'd followed her as she traveled the US, solving seemingly unsolvable mysteries brought about by regular people. More than 2 years on, Starley was still being asked when a new episode would drop. So she's taken it on by herself with the help of her fans.
Okay, I started a Patreon to do an experiment where I do one episode to see how that goes.
Okay.
And the reason I made it one episode is to make it, because I just wanted, like, I just feel like I had to kind of start a little gradually, because like, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel, because there's been a lot of emotions involved in this whole process that I didn't really anticipate. And so I'm just trying to like, take it a little slow.
Well, I can understand that. So you're a different person now to the person that you were in 2015 when the show was canceled, right?
Yeah. Do I sound like a different person?
Do you say, no, you don't. You sound, but that, I mean, the things happen and everybody changes in time. So.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Okay.
But I've never had something like change me more than this. Like, I've never, it was really, I don't know. Like, I've never like experienced anything like that. Like, the level of disillusionment was really intense. And there's something that happens when it's coupled with the thing that you love doing so much. I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's like a particular recipe for a certain kind of disillusionment, but I just didn't, I still feel waves of the effects of it all the time.
Will it work or not? Well, with more than 1,000 backers so far, it's difficult to see how it won't. I'm looking forward to the return of Mystery Show. And if you are too, here's how you can get on board.
They go to Patreon and then they type me, I get my name in, I guess.
Starley Kine.
Just my name.
Yeah.
Yeah, Starley Kine. And then they can back it if they want to. No pressure.
Now, here's the bit where I ask for advice. We've already established that my instincts are terrible. And given her experience of the podcasting industry, does she think it's something that I should avoid like the plague?
If we were all making bets 10 years ago, whether print or radio would survive, you would have bet on print. And it's just the craziest thing that radio has become the thing that is suddenly valuable. You know?
So true.
Like, that's crazy. Instead of newspapers or magazines. And so all of my print journalism friends don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I should be feeling ecstatic that somehow my medium is the thing that everyone wants to now be in. But instead, it's like, I think you hit a point, no matter what, where you just start to question, like, what I'm interested in, what stories I want to be telling, you know, like everything is kind of up for debate now to me.
Oh, so nice to hear you say that, though. That's exactly how I feel. It's like, what do I've just gone, what do I want to do? Like, all of these are the things that I can do that everyone's telling me that I can do. But if I could just do what I want to do, what would I do? So,
yeah, it's very confusing. It's very confusing to figure out because you, like, you can, it's not as simple as being like, I want to like doing this, so I want to do that again, because you're different.
Yeah.
And the world is different. Totally. And you can't throw yourself into it the same way. You have to keep evolving, but it's really painful to evolve. It's really, and that's why a lot of people don't, because it's hard and scary and really, really messes with your head. But I do think it's the way I think it has to be done.
But doing it can be really, really hard, especially if you have no idea what you're doing. The thing that I love about Starley's story is that even though she was really badly burned and hurt by this experience, she still wants to follow her passion. And I think that's the theme from today's episode. It's that creativity is really important for our well-being, whether you get that through your job or through some other means. Being able to express yourself creatively and do the things that you love are really good for you, from a mental health point of view at least. In the next episode of Reasons Not to Die, we hear from war veteran Ben Farinazzo, who had to make dramatic changes to his high-flying post-service life just to stay alive.
My youngest son said to me, "Dad, getting PTSD was the best thing that happened to us, wasn't it?" What are you talking about? He said, "Well, you used to work all the time and we never got to see you, but we get to see you every day now."
If you're concerned that you're at risk or you just want to talk about it, remember you can talk about suicide. In Australia, the number to call is Lifeline on 13 11 14. In the US, it's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. There are similar services in the UK, New Zealand, and most countries worldwide. I'll put a link in the show notes. It'll take you exactly where you need to go. So that's the first episode of Reasons Not to Die. I'm Sam Iken. Follow me on Facebook or Twitter or any social media. Sam Iken. Look me up. Reasons Not to Die is an Iken Media production. It's written, produced, hosted, and edited by me, Sam Iken. I was assisted by Angela Warren. The music you can hear is from Breakmaster Cylinder. The cover art was done by Steve Alden. Our guests were the amazing Josh Langley and the wonderful Starley Kine. And a special thank you to Dan McHugh and Michelle Ransom Hughes.